In 778 AD, a minor military skirmish occurred in the Pyrenees Mountains. Charlemagne's rearguard ambushed by Basque warriors, a footnote in medieval chronicles. Yet 3 centuries later, this forgotten border clash would explode into Western civilization's most influential epic poem. The Song of Roland transforms a tactical defeat into a cosmic drama of honor, betrayal, and divine justice that would shape European identity for a millennium. What makes this metamorphosis so fascinating? An unknown poet reimagined history through the lens of the First Crusade, converting Basque mountaineers into Saracen armies, and a 36-year-old king into a 200-year-old emperor of mythic proportions. This wasn't mere embellishment, it was cultural alchemy. The poem became a mirror reflecting medieval society's deepest values: feudal loyalty as sacred covenant, martial prowess as spiritual calling, and death in battle as the ultimate expression of faith. Even today, Roland's fatal refusal to call for help resonates as a cautionary tale about pride's destructive power, a theme echoing through everything from Greek tragedy to modern cinema. After 7 years conquering Spain, Charlemagne faces only Saragossa, ruled by desperate King Marsil. Marsil devises a cunning plan: send false promises of conversion and lavish gifts to lure the emperor home. When Roland nominates his stepfather Ganelon as messenger, what appears as respect ignites murderous rage. Ganelon sees this as a death sentence, his fury visceral. "Thou thinkest here the glove will fall out of this hand of mine, even as the staff of office fell erewhile out of thine." This reference reveals festering wounds beneath courtly decorum. The poet traces Ganelon's descent from insulted nobleman to calculating traitor. When Marsil threatens death, Ganelon displays remarkable courage, backing against a pine tree with drawn sword. This bravery makes his subsequent betrayal chilling. When offered wealth and power, his resistance crumbles. He engineers Roland's assignment to the rearguard, positioning him for ambush. Most devastating is how Ganelon corrupts the sacred oath-taking that should secure loyalty, swearing upon holy relics to carry out treachery. Personal grievance poisons the feudal bonds sustaining society, setting catastrophe in motion. At Roncevaux Pass, courage and pride collide with devastating consequences. When a massive Saracen army appears, Olivier urges Roland to blow his olifant horn to recall Charlemagne. Roland refuses 3 times. "It would dishonor me in France to call for help against mere Paynims. I'd rather die than bring shame upon my parents or France." The poet captures their difference. Roland is proud while Olivier is wise, both gallant men who will never flee battle. As French forces dwindle, Olivier, struck from behind while blinded by blood, unwittingly strikes his friend. Recognizing his error too late, their reconciliation transcends chaos. Roland forgives him before our God on high, and the beloved companions bow their heads to each other in farewell. Only when defeat becomes irreversible does Roland blow the horn, too late to save his men, but ensuring Charlemagne will return for vengeance. Roland's death transforms military catastrophe into spiritual triumphs. Mortally wounded, he strikes his legendary sword Durendal against marble to prevent its capture, but the blade refuses to shatter, a miracle prompting him to recite the holy relics within its golden pommel: St. Peter's tooth, St. Basil's blood, St. Denis's hair, and part of the Virgin's vesture. This catalog transforms weapon into sacred relic, linking martial prowess to divine purpose. Roland positions himself facing Spain so Charlemagne will find him as a conqueror who died confronting his enemies. He offers his right-hand glove to heaven, a feudal gesture acknowledging God as ultimate lord, brilliantly recasting earthly vassalage in cosmic terms. Angels descend. God sends cherubim, Saint Michael of the Peril of the Sea, and Gabriel to bear Roland's soul to paradise. Despite pride's role in the disaster, suffering and faith achieve redemption. The scene balances intimate and cosmic dimensions. Roland's final memories of sweet France, his dear kindred, and Charlemagne who raised him humanize the hero, while supernatural signs erupt, Tempests shake the earth, earthquakes split ancient walls, darkness descends at noon. Nature itself mourns, heaven and earth meeting in acknowledgement of martyrdom. Discovering the massacre, Charlemagne tears his beard, a gesture of profound masculine anguish in medieval literature, crying, "Where art thou, fair my nephew?" At Roland's body, stretched towards Spain with shattered Oliphant beside him, the emperor swoons repeatedly while his knights lament. Supernatural elements emphasize cosmic significance. When twilight threatens pursuit, Charlemagne prays and God freezes the sun, paralleling Joshua's biblical victory, transforming pursuit into holy warfare with nature itself bending to God's chosen warrior. At the Ebro River, Saracens drown like Pharaoh's army, their heavy armor dragging them beneath the waters. Balagant, ancient emir of Babylon who has outlived Homer and Virgil, arrives with massive reinforcements. His climactic duel with Charlemagne becomes civilizational clash. When Balagant's sword cleaves Charlemagne's helmet, Saint Gabriel intervenes. "What dost thou, King most mighty?" The angel's presence transforms physical weakness into spiritual strength. Charlemagne's final blow splits Balagant's head, symbolically crushing paganism itself. The epic concludes with justice rather than swords, as Charlemagne seeks legal resolution for Roland's death. Ganelon defends himself strategically. "I admit desiring Roland's death for personal wrongs, but deny treason." This distinction between personal vengeance and treason against the state forces the court to confront difficult questions about loyalty and legitimate grievance within feudal systems. Resolution comes through judicial combat, champions fighting as God's instruments to reveal truth. When Tyri, physically outmatched by Ganelon's champion Pinabel, nevertheless triumphs, the Franks interpret this as divine confirmation. God has performed a miracle. Ganelon's execution is unflinching, his body torn apart by four stallions in public restoration of moral order. His 30 kinsmen who supported him are also hanged, emphasizing the collective nature of feudal justice. The poem balances harsh justice with reconciliation. Queen Bramimonde's baptism and renaming as Juliana represents spiritual redemption's possibility even after bitter conflict. Yet the epic refuses simple closure. In its final lines, exhausted Charlemagne receives new divine command through Gabriel, "March to Libya to aid another Christian king." The emperor pulls his beard and weeps at this endless call to battle, each victory merely prelude to another test of faith and courage. The Song of Roland transforms medieval moments into timeless meditations on loyalty, betrayal, pride, and sacrifice. At its core, the poem asks what we owe those who command our allegiance, whether lords, nations, or ideals. Roland's absolute commitment represents one answer, while Ganelon's betrayal offers dark counterpoint. The poem reveals pride's complex relationship to honor. Roland's refusal to blow his horn stems from noble desire to protect reputation, yet this same pride leads to catastrophe. Our greatest virtues become fatal flaws when taken to extremes, psychological insight Shakespeare would later explore in Tragic Heroes. Most powerfully, the epic examines how societies make meaning from sacrifice and defeat. Roland's death, though resulting from tactical error, is transfigured into meaningful martyrdom. Charlemagne returns to avenge fallen warriors, converting military disaster into spiritual triumph. The poem's final image captures this perfectly. Weary Charlemagne, commanded by God to continue fighting despite grief, embodies moral struggle's exhausting permanence. There is no final victory, only continued vigilance. This ancient calm's unflinching commitment to values greater than self-preservation challenges us to consider what principles we would die to defend.